racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
A big welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bupka, so proud to be sitting alongside of Jay Randolph Jr., much better known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, first of all, Happy New Year, and I heard through the golf grapevine some changes at Normandy.
Well, there are some things in the works right now, and we're going to hopefully be able to talk about those next Monday directly. But it looks like, unfortunately, the golf course built in 1901 may be shutting down, but I may be landing at another signature facility in St. Louis. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, and we'll talk about it next week. I know I didn't get to join you last week, but you told me before we started the show you had a wonderful time in Hawaii.
Yeah, I really did. It's always a great time when you can go to Maui and meet a coal miner from Indiana. I mean, normally that doesn't happen, but it's a long story. We don't have time for it. But what we do have time for, Jay, is talk about the Sony Open and somebody that I discussed with you a couple of years back, had the opportunity of meeting this young gentleman. He's now 26 years old. He looks about 18. He's from Australia. His name is Cameron Smith. He comes out on top. He had won before, but it was kind of that team event down in New Orleans, Jay. This is his first time winning as an individual. Very talented. Has the same manager staff that Jason Day has, so he's a quality person and a good player, and I expect to see a lot of things from him.
Well, and you've been saying that, and I think that, you know, getting that, I don't want to say monkey off your back, but winning solo, you know, after winning a team event with Jonas Blixt, I think is big for him. I mean, he's still relatively young. I know we talk about these kids now at such young ages, but he's just coming into his prime, and it was a big final round for him. He had to come from behind, and you got to give him a lot of credit to get this done. And I think, you know, again, now what are the expectations for a player like Cameron Smith that he's got his first solo victory, and because he looked so good there in the final round?
Yeah, he's solid from top to bottom, and this is what Cameron had to say about how he came out on top at the Sony Open.
I guess just sticking in there. I didn't feel like I played particularly well, but just, you know, made the putts that I had to make, and you know, those up and downs to kind of keep the momentum going a little bit. I managed to get up and down, so. It was a struggle all day, though. The conditions wet and a little bit windy this morning, so it was a challenge for sure. I've always been quite good at not giving up. I've never felt the need to kind of mentally check out in any way, and you know, like you were saying before, I started bogey, triple bogey, and then finished that day even par and progressed from there. So. Yeah, I mean, it was a big fight all week. My first individual win on the PGA Tour is, you know, it's definitely going to be one I never forget. And, you know, given the conditions and how tough it was, I'll definitely draw back on this in the future for sure.
I can't help but think that if he showed up at the first tee and Jay Randolph had his sticks, he'd take a look at this young guy and be offering him two or three aside, and Jay would go home without a shirt on his back. But, I mean, he's a real player, and he's a real nice guy. And, boy, when you take that combination, and we're seeing more and more of that on the PGA Tour. You've been talking about it for quite a while. The caliber of the players now, they're not only excelling on the golf course, Jay, they're really model citizens off the golf course, and that just makes it special.
Well, I think it adds something to the game that we both love. I also got a feeling from this final round that, you know, Brendan Steele, you know, to make bogey, to play the last six holes in two over par, you're not going to win many golf tournaments. Even though while I played pretty difficult that final day. So he's got to be kicking himself a little bit. Cameron was certainly benefited by the fact that Brendan Steele did not birdie one of the easiest holes on the golf course, the 18th, and win it outright and got in the playoff. And Cam Smith is in the winner's circle.
It always amazes me when the tournament's played at Wailea, because a golf course located right next to Shinnecock called Southampton Golf Club, which I was a member of for many years, also designed by Seth Rayner. And this is back in the 20s, and I think of the difference. It might have taken Seth a half a year to even get to Honolulu to design the course. A little bit more about Cameron Smith, Jay. He donated $10,500 of his own money. He said his uncle lost everything in those horrific fires that had taken place down in Australia.
Yeah, a nice move by him, recognizing what had happened in his home continent, if you will, or home country. And like I said, what's this going to do for him stature-wise? What's it going to do for him confidence-wise? He's been with the same golf coach for a long time. He's really only in his fourth year over here, or third year, really, over here on the PGA Tour. So good things for Cameron Smith. Absolutely, Bob.
Yeah, and it kind of moves him up in the FedEx points thing. He's currently fifth. Justin Thomas surprised everybody. He won the Century and then misses the cut at Wailea. Brendan Steele, as you well documented, Jay, had it in the bag to just about the end. Good showing by Webb Simpson, former U.S. Open champion, fellow former U.S. Open champion, Graham McDowell, tied for fourth. Ryan Palmer, the old man, Ryan Palmer, in his 40s, showing that he still has plenty of ammo in that bag.
Well, as you well know, Wailea Country Club is not, you know, necessarily a bomber's paradise. And you have to work your way around the golf course a little bit and know the golf course, and not surprising to see some veterans there. Webb Simpson, you know, I think a lot of people wondered, you didn't hear too much from him after he won the U.S. Open, but he has refound his game and is playing some really good golf. And Graham McDowell got to be kicking himself because he missed a couple of really good opportunities. I know he shot a low final round, but he could have been a couple lower and got a piece of that playoff. And I would have liked to seen that attitude in a playoff after shooting like 62.
And of course, we'd be remiss, Jay, the recent passing of Pete Dye. You know, just a legendary gentleman of his own right. Had the pleasure of knowing with him, interviewing him many, many times. A sheer delight. Probably noted as you know, revolutionizing the game with all those railroad ties and
railroad ties.
Yeah, and Pete Dye, the railroad tie. You know, but he was a super person and quite talented as a player. And of course, lost his wife earlier this year, Alice Dye. Many said that, you know, she was the real brains behind the Dye golf courses, most famously known for the 17th hole down at the Players' Championship. Job well done, Pete Dye. We've been proud to have you as part of the game. Well, American Express, Jay, getting ready. Adam Long defending. Phil is hosting the tournament.
We've seen this tournament start with the vision of Bob Hope and the way he brought this game to the masses and made this a special, unique event. And in all of sports, there are only two opportunities for amateurs to play and compete on the actual playing field as the professionals. And it's here and at AT&T up in Monterey in the game of golf. And to be a part of one of those two events is an opportunity I think is pretty exciting. And then to now have the partner that sees that vision too and get the right people here and make this special, I'm excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear, Jay, that It's going to be around for a long time. Obviously, was well known as the Bob Hope Desert Classic.
Well, and you know what? It should still be known as the Bob Hope Desert Classic. I don't understand. I mean, I don't think American Express would have a problem calling it the Bob Hope Classic. This is something I don't understand. And I know there's a lot of, you know, the tours involved and the does involved, but, you know, I think for what Hope did for the game, what Hope did for the region, I've never understood why they took the name off. I just don't get that. But it's a good event because a lot of guys, you know, if you didn't qualify to play in Kapalua, you may not have made the trip to Hawaii to play at Wailea. So you've got some guys teeing it up this week, some sticks. You got some guys like Kevin Kisner, who did play, who's making the trip. Ricky Fowler will be there. Brendan Steele off the rough finish on the backside at the Sony Open. So, again, you know, the days, Bob, of weak fields, I think that's a misnomer anymore.
I agree with you, Jay. I'm glad you brought that point up. I think the quality of depth has never been greater on the PGA Tour than it is now. And matter of fact, I had that discussion with Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, when we sat down together on Maui, talking about the world of professional golf. Kevin Kisner, you know, maybe he's destined to win a major. He's been out on tour and obviously very good friends with his caddy, Dwayne Bach. But Kevin Kisner, been out there 15 years. I mean, I look at him, I think, well, maybe he's played a year or two. 15 years, that's a long time to play on tour.
Now, that's a long run, and they brought it up during the broadcast at Wailea that he's one of those guys that kind of's in a position now where he's got to take advantage of certain venues where you may not have to hit it 310 or 315 or carry it 300. And, you know, he can, what he's done the last couple of years is continue to improve while the conditions for him to be successful are tougher. So good for him, and hope, and you know, he can play those golf courses in the desert. Anybody can.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. It's Target Golf at its best. We shouldn't leave off Johnny Vegas, the greatest name in golf, but he won this event twice, back-to-back, matter of fact, in 2016 and 2017. That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, and I know we're going to talk about the Champions Tour. Steve Stricker slumming this week in Palm Springs instead of I don't think he's not eligible for the tournament in Hawaii.
Yeah, you're right. The PGA Tour Champions, I'm glad you brought it up, Jay. They're going to be playing the Mitsubishi Electric Championship. That is their annual award dinner tournament. And good news coming from the shores of Hawaii. Mitsubishi, just a couple of weeks ago, we were proud about Century signing a 10-year extension. Mitsubishi announced a new 5-year extension for the sponsorship of that tournament. That's good news for the senior boys.
I don't even understand what the hell this tournament is. So you got winners of PGA Tour champion majors in the last 5 years. There are five of those, by the way, a year. The last five Charles Schwab Cup champions, so Scott McCarron and Bernard Langer, winners of here's the key, the winners of the co-sponsored events. I kept looking like, where do they get these players from? But anybody who's won an event, co-sponsored event the past 2 years, I'm sure the dinner is wonderful. God bless Mitsubishi Electronics for getting involved and staying involved. And I hope it continues to do well. St. Louis is on the schedule this year, so I got to get a little fired up.
Yeah, you should. And also playing in that Mitsubishi, members of the World Golf Hall of Fame that are eligible. So it's kind of a hodgepodge, throw it together, you know, roster that they get teeing off. But the bottom line is there's an awful lot of good players that are playing there.
Let's take a brief time out, and then news and views from around the world of golf will be up next. Bob and I will delve into the tour's new slow play policy that was just announced. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
The Capilore Villas Maui is the official hotel partner of the Grill Room Golf Show during the Century Tournament of Champions, held each January at the Plantation Course. Yes, I know it's snowing in some parts of the U.S. Yes, I know it's cold and miserable. And yes, we thought you might like to hear from General Manager Bill Reese on the advantages of choosing Capilore Villas Maui for your next vacation.
We've got the weather, we've got the beach, we've got the golf course, we've got the palm trees, we have properties facing the golf course, if that's your cup of tea, where you can actually watch the golfers on the fairway. We have properties in the ridge, which is high on the hill, so you can get a very panoramic ocean view of Molokai and the tropical environment. And also we have the bay villas, which are right down by the Onaloa Bay, which is oceanfront. Fully equipped kitchens in every condo, washer, dryer, and there is a refrigerator freezer so you can have that ice cream at midnight without having to go out. We've got the friendly people and the aloha. There's not much more you could ask for.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Jay Randolph Jr. You can find me on Twitter if that's your thing. STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Mr. Bubka is there at Bob Bubka, V-O-G, the V-O-G for the voice of golf. And voice, one of the things that we both have great disdain for is slow play, whether it be at a local muni or the highest of country clubs or on the PGA Tour. Neither one of us are fans of it, and the PGA Tour says they're going to try and do something about it.
Yeah, it's such a vital point, Jay, because I don't care, as you alluded to, where you're playing. I personally am a strong believer that if somebody goes to play a round of golf and they have a lousy round, but they play it in a reasonable amount of time, it doesn't bother them as much as playing a good round of golf, but taking, you know, 5 hours to play 18 holes. I mean, times are different now. Time is, yep, is of the essence. And, you know, a lot of people don't have 5 hours to devote to a round of golf.
Absolutely. Over the last couple of years, Bob, I've seen a lot of people trying to do nine hole rates or come out late in the afternoon and get as many as they can in. I think that the day and age of everybody playing 18 holes on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning is become a little passe. I know it still survives at a lot of country clubs and things like that. And it's just, you know, and slow play is, I think, you know, other than the game being so difficult and so darn hard, I think slow play is right up there with why we do lose people. And based on shot, what's going to be created, Bob, is an observation list. It'll be made up of the slowest players on a week-to-week basis. And over a 10-week tournament period is going to provide historical data on each player to determine who is on that list. And that list will not be made public. This is for their own research. And apparently players that are placed on the observation list with warnings, if they exceed 60 seconds to play a shot, a second bad time will then result in a one-stroke penalty. So it's almost like they're taking it out of the rules officials' hands, if you know what I mean. It used to be the rules official sitting there with his watch and looking at it. I don't know. I don't know what'll work. I don't think that it necessarily what will work on the PGA Tour for pace of play works at Normandy or Paso Tiempo or wherever.
Well, that's obviously going to be the interesting point. Just on the surface, though, you know, there were two lists If you played professional golf or you played any kind of golf, you didn't want to be on the list of people that shank the golf ball. And you didn't want to be on the list of people that cheat. Now, we're going to add a new one. You don't want to be on that observation list. Boy, that means you're nothing but slow.
I can take I'd take the shank over the slow any day. I just got to make sure I'm on the right side, because slow play just, you know, and you said it, Bob, you're okay if you're playing good in a 5-hour round, but if you're playing bad and it's a 5-hour round, that's not much fun. So we'll see. And I know that one of the slower guys on the Player Advisory Council, Paul Casey, I mean, he's, you know, he can get it going a little slow sometimes. He talked about the players' input on how the new slow play policy was developed.
I hope it can happen. Because as we all agreed when we've discussed this, we're not looking for, I guess there's two or three things that we're looking for, that we felt that we were looking for. This is from the players' point of view. One was, we're not looking for a massive change in, we can't get around these golf courses that quick. It's just very difficult to walk some of these golf courses in the time we're meant to. This time par thing always frustrates the players a little bit. But we need to speed up. But it's not a massive change. We're just looking for sort of 10 minutes here or 15 minutes there, ideally, is what we're looking for. We're looking for guys to take responsibility. Because hitting a standard golf shot and taking two and a half minutes to play it is not acceptable. So taking ownership of that responsibility, however you want to phrase it, that's all about education. And then the perception then drastically changes if you do those two things, which are fairly straightforward, fairly painless games, to be honest. And that's basically all it is from our point of view. There's more to it, obviously the policy, but that was our feeling. You know, it's just... it should be a fairly simple thing to fix. So hopefully this fixes it.
It's almost as confusing as Megan and Harry, where they're going to be living. I don't know. Let me try and break it down a little bit, Jay. Previously, the group had to be out of place on the course for players to be watched and then warned about slow play. Previously, two bad times in a round, you got a penalty stroke. That very rarely happened. Matter of fact, I think the last time it happened was in the mid-90s. Now,
I can't remember, yeah.
Two bad times in a tournament gives you a penalty stroke. And if a player exceeds 60 seconds, he'll be fined on an individual basis, even if his group is in position. If no infractions occur within two holes, they'll take the watch off of him. Boy, the intrigue is beginning to build up. Now, how about this, Jay? And I just thought of it. I'm betting on a player, and he's playing real slow. I'm going to be yelling at the TV, speed up, you're going to get a penalty, and I'm going to lose my bet.
Absolutely. Could kill your DraftKings team. Guy loses, guy gets a penalty like that. You know, there's always been the theory, well, you know, find these guys. Find them what? I mean, you're going to find Justin Thomas 10 grand for a slow time, but you take a couple of shots away. And, you know, the other thing, and Paul Casey is a slower player. Here's the thing. One bad apple does spoil the tree as it relates to pace of play. If you've got one guy on the golf course in the middle of a field that's on the course, and he is a slow player, that affects the rest of the field. So, you know, I don't think if you got 144 guys in a field that more than 10 to 15 at most are problem causers. But one of them, if it happens, it changes the whole deal.
Now, that's a good point, Jay, because, you know, you would think that you would – require 20, 25 players playing slow to affect the time. And as you just pointed out, one guy slows it down. It slows it down for everybody.
I mean, I was in discussions with a local amateur golf tournament committee. That it's a prominent, you know, group. And I was trying to get more tee times in the afternoon for our patrons and to make some money. And I said, could we go on 9-minute intervals, tee times? So, well, Jay, we'd really like to keep it at 10. And I'm like, if 1 minute on a tee sheet is ruining your field's pace of play, we got problems from the get-go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. You know, it's something.
I don't either, Bob. And to hear him say, Paul Casey say, you know, it's pretty easy. I think we got it figured out. Well, you'll be the first one to do it in a long, long time, brother.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that in the grill room and bring everybody up to date on how it happens. But just in closing, on the pace of play, everybody listening, if you go out in your own group, just maybe try and pick it up just a little bit. It's going to make the players in your group happy, the players behind you happy, and certainly playing golf, we want everybody to be happy. Somebody that's not happy, and he's taking some action, and that's Patrick Reed. He's now instructed his lawyer to issue a cease and desist letter to Golf Channel's Brandel Chambly. And, of course, we know Chambly is paid by Golf Channel to offer up his opinions. And the one he offers up about Patrick Reed implies that Reed cheated during the Hero World Challenge. And I don't know if there's any connection, but it crossed my mind, you know, with what just happened in baseball. Houston Astros accused of cheating. Patrick Reed. He's from Houston, Texas. What do we got, a plague going on here in Houston, Jay? Help me out.
You know, sometimes things are better just left alone. and I think Patrick makes another mistake and brings more attention to himself and to Brandel, who I oftentimes disagree with, but was dead on and continues to be dead on, I believe, in his opinions about Patrick Reed. But for Patrick Reed to instruct a lawyer to try and get Brandel Chambly to stop giving his opinion, which he's paid for by the Golf Channel to give his opinion, is just, I mean, butter smothered in butter. It doesn't make any sense, and it just brings more attention to Patrick and more dislike and disdain. And, you know, it's time to maybe look in the mirror a little bit. And I've even seen some people, Bob, defend him by saying, well, he took the penalty. Well, yeah, he took the penalty, but he never said that he even knew that he'd done it or that it was happened. Well, what do you mean he took the penalty? Of course he's going to take the penalty. He's not going to get paid that week. So, you know, I don't know what to say about this guy. You don't want it to become a sideshow because he does have talent.
Well, I think the best way to solve this, plain and simple, 3 rounds in the ring, Patrick Reed versus Brandel Chambly. Heck, they had Phil Mickelson playing against Tiger Woods. Why don't we have Chambly squaring off against Patrick Reed? Let's get out of that subject and move to Brooks Koepka. We've been wondering about the health of his knee. He kind of re-injured it at the CJ Cup in Korea, where he WD'd after slipping on the wet pavement. Apparently, it's all healed and is stable. And this coming from his coach, who I think maybe is the best coach in golf, Pete Cowan. His game hasn't suffered with the layoff. Brooks Koepka, the number one ranked player in the world, good reports on his health. That's got to make everybody happy.
When's he going to play?
Well, good news, Jay. He's going to be playing in Abu Dhabi this week. So happy for Brooks Koepka. He's a real talent.
In our feature interview this week, we catch up again with themorningread.com's Alex Maselli, and all the chips are on the table, literally, as the commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, explains the tour's position on wagering. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
In the Grow Room with Bob and Jay, we continue now with certainly a very familiar voice. First time we're going to be speaking to him in 2020. His name is Alex Maselli. We always like having Alex on. And you know where I'm going to begin, Alex, is with launching, obviously, a new year. Had the opportunity to spend some time recently with the commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan. My biggest take from that interview was the excitement level of gambling coming to the PGA Tour. In fact, let's hear what the commissioner had to say.
I think it's a wonderful engagement tool, and we've seen that internationally where it's been legalized, and now with the passing of PASPA last May and seven states where gaming is legalized, I think you're starting to see some momentum on that front. Obviously, we've put all the proper checks and balances in place, and I think people, I think you think about the game itself, and for those that are listening, you know, when you were a young kid or when you took up this game, whether you were playing for a nickel or playing for a quarter Nassau, playing for a dollar Nassau, it is part of the fabric of the sport. And I think when people look at competition week in and week out, the fact that you've got 30,000 shots hit every single week, 1.2 million over the course of the year, we're on different time frames around the world, I think it's an opportunity to bring people closer to our sport. And that's the way we're looking at it. And we're going to be very thoughtful about that.
Is that a surefire 100% good thing?
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a surefire 100% good thing. Is it 99% good? Yeah, probably. The only thing bad about gambling is the fact that someone could somehow change the outcome of a game and that they're not participating in that game. That's always been the concern in sports. So, that being said, I think the likelihood of that happening in golf is a lot less than it happening in a team sport. Because, you know, look, you're not, if one person decided to tank it, it's really not going to change the outcome, most likely. And anyone that's good enough to win a golf tournament, which is what we're talking about, would have to do something to change the outcome since there's no defense and offense kind of thing. So then you look at what the positives are and you realize the fact that golf is from a demographic standpoint, golf is perfect for gambling. It just fits right in there in regards to who you want participating in that, watching golf and then gambling. Because as you know, again, golf participation versus golf watchers are two different people. Doesn't mean that in a Venn diagram, there's not a lot of overlap, but there are people that watch golf that don't play golf. And now the second part of that is those people now will probably watch it more and be more interested in it because they can bet. And inherently, betting has always been part of golf, at least, you know, not necessarily the way we're going to be doing it now. But, you know, on a golf course, golfers, people that participate, have always bet. That's just inherently part of the game. So I just see that the interest level will be there, the continued interest level, the products that the tour had started with, meaning things like ShotLink, are going to just grow in importance to the masses because that information is going to be something that gamblers will want. So at the end of the day, you're going to have more people interested in the game. They'll be spending more time watching the game. And if you're the commissioner of the PGA Tour, which is the largest golf product out there, you have to be excited.
Isn't it realistic, though, that a person with a huge wager on a particular player or against a particular player is in attendance, has the opportunity to scream or make some kind of noise in the backswing to influence the shot. Are they going to be able to address that concern?
Well, you would have to assume that that's something that they are concerned about. And the answer is, when I've talked to Jay Monahan, it's been they're not, because gambling has been a part and parcel of what's gone on in Europe for years. And we haven't heard of any situations where people gambled on a particular player and then went ahead and did what you're suggesting at a golf tournament. So why would we think that would happen now because gambling is coming to the United States? The answer is they don't. They don't believe that that's going to change the dynamic. Now, people can say that person that yelled when Patrick Reed was putting on the 18th green in the playoff at Kapalua, that that's a situation that could be a concern. But in that particular situation, as far as we know, the comments were made because of what Patrick Reed had done prior to that at the Bahamas. So, you know, you can still always get someone yelling, but the likelihood is that that's not going to be the case, and most likely not going to be the case just because someone gambled on a particular player.
Well, Alex, as usual, had a good front nine. Let's see what he has on the back nine. Going to mention two names to you, Alex. Neither one is in the field. What I want you to do, based on your expertise, pick one of the players and tell me who's going to have the better year. Is it going to be Jordan Spieth or is it going to be Jason Day?
Oh, I think there's no question it's going to be Jordan Spieth. And the reason I say that is Jordan Spieth clearly is working towards his game, working towards figuring out his game. Now, that might make some changes, do some different things, whatever that is. And obviously he's not in the field this week because he had a – or last week, actually, he wasn't in the field because he was sick, a venue, Sony, which he likes to play in. So I see only upside for Jordan Spieth. For Jason Day, I think the downside is the fact that we don't know what he can do physically. Clearly, his body is not where it needs to be. And we're not sure, and I mean, from what I've heard, no one is sure if his back will ever be what it needs to be for him to play at the highest levels on a consistent basis. So if I'm gambling between back or a guy that's 25 or 26 years old and just kind of had a bad couple of years, I'm going with the guy who had a bad couple of years who's won numerous majors versus the guy that's got a bad back and has won one major, and also his reputation may be unfairly given to him, but his reputation is that he's soft.
It's amazing. We can refine this even further. It's easy to say that most of Jordan Spieth's problems are mental. Most of Jason Day's problems are physical. And it's a pretty tough call to ascertain accurately who can recover quicker, somebody suffering from their mental aspect of their golf game or their physical aspect of their golf game.
Well, you know what's crazy is you look at it, let's say 4 years ago, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, you didn't see much separation. So you say, well, you know, there isn't much. Now you look at it today, Jordan Spieth and Brooks Koepka, the amount of separation between the two in your own mind has got to be massive. It's like the Grand Canyon. So, I mean, that's what Jordan Spieth has to overcome, and that is not easily done.
Speaking of Brooks Koepka, before we let you go, and we're speaking with Alex Maselli, any word whatsoever coming out of Southern Florida on Brooks Koepka?
Well, he's at Abu Dhabi this week, and he said that he further had torn his ligament into his patella, I think is what it said. But at the same time, what he said was that, look, you know, if you think that people show up to these events on a weekly basis without some kind of niggling injury, you're absolutely wrong. It doesn't matter who it is. So he is, he's had this problem for a while. He's obviously dealt with it, I would say, relatively successfully. Taking the time off, I think, was positive. I haven't personally talked to him. I will in 2 weeks. And when I do, I really want to understand more, not only the fact that, you know, obviously he has injuries and like everybody does, or physical problems, but, you know, mentally how he's dealing with that. And is that something that can creep in to, does he believe it's something that can creep in on a weekly basis or even a daily basis? I mean, does he wake up not knowing if he's going to have a problem or not have a problem? Because as we know, with these kind of things, you can wake up one day and feel great. And the next day you wake up and you barely can get out of bed. So those are things that I don't know about Brooks Koepka. But what I do know is that he's in the Middle East and he's playing this week, and he'll be playing in 2 weeks in Saudi Arabia, which I'll be at.
As we show you the door for your appearance on In the Grill Room, who is going to have the best year in 2020? Which player, from your perspective, is going to be the best player this year?
Well, from my standpoint, it's got to be between Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka. and I'm sure people would probably think about Tiger a little. He's looked very good when you've seen him play, but there's a realization about Tiger that, you know, any day this could be something completely different. So I think Rory looks the strongest, but, you know, I have a hard time not picking Brooks Koepka, so I'm going to stick with Brooks Koepka.
Alex Maselli, Brooks Koepka, two winners in my book. Thanks for your time, Alex. Talk to you soon in the Grill Room with Bob and Jay.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.